This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, will join us here in a moment. I'm going to need you guys to do some heavy lifting here out of the start of the segment. Well, you know, we were talking earlier in the hour about Noodles barbecuing before he came on the air. And asking Steph for some help, and you know, we got into that whole story. But
I didn't need a house fire. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right? And my wife is upstairs. She's making chicken parm, which I am not complaining about. It is spectacular, outstanding. But the fire alarm—well, not the fire alarm, the smoke alarm—was just going off.
Oh God!
And you know when you got to get the towel out, and you're like waving at it. Yeah. I just spent 5 minutes waving at this thing. I am so exhausted. It's the most exercise I've done in probably 3 weeks. And
I love how that was probably your fault, too.
No, it wasn't, but she was like, I can't do anything. I'm doing this. She had, like, eggs all over her hands because she's making, like, with breadcrumbs and all that. And the kids are going crazy. And I'm trying to open doors and windows, and I'm trying to shut this thing up. And I'm just, I'm exhausted.
I have a barbecuing question, cooking question.
Yes. Okay.
Last night I fired up a couple steaks, and the second one's got to go down tonight. How do you kind of, I don't want to like over, like it cooked it perfectly.
You don't want to reheat it. Yeah.
How do you reheat it? Do you fire up the queue again?
I
believe your oven has a setting where you could put it in your oven. It's like a warming. Well,
yeah,
you can almost. Yeah, so just put it in warming in your oven to try and just kind of like organically bring it back to life, if that makes sense. I'm sure there's some cooks out there that could actually give us real advice instead of me just making something up. But that's
You're right, because you can set your oven at like 200 or something. Yeah. Instead, like most of them start like a conventional
350.
They'll start at 325 or 350. You can set it at 200, and it's just. You put it in there for 5 minutes, I think you're set, man.
Yeah, it'll bring it back to life, and if there's any juices trapped in it, it'll kind of, revive it a little bit. And that's what I would do. Like, we always have, like, I buy that pre-made pizza dough, I'll make the homemade pizzas on the weekend, and then the next day, to warm them up, I just throw them in the oven to kind of bring the cheese back to life a little
bit. Well, I pulled the Ronnie Trump a couple nights ago. We actually made a steak and we overcooked it. That was
fault.
Yeah, it was bad. And I'm usually a medium rare guy, and this was bordering on well done. But I guess Trump, he loves a well done steak with ketchup. Like that's that's his order. Doesn't matter where he is, White House, nicest steakhouse in New York, Paris, London, Tokyo, it doesn't matter.
He wants
that thing well done with ketchup on the side. I gave it a shot because I had overcooked the steak.
Yeah, you turned it into a burger, basically.
Basically, it was a burger. It actually wasn't that bad. Like, I'm not saying I will go with that in the future. I will continue to go with the medium rare if I can get it to that level. But if you overcook it, fire up the Trump cocktail and mix a little ketchup in there, you're okay.
I don't mind.
I support it now.
I'm a medium well to well guy anyways, which is, I know that disgusts a lot
of
steak eaters.
That's a bad palate. Yeah, a bad palate.
It does. But, I mean, I've also been with lunatics that are like blue rare, which is disgusting.
I know. I've seen that too. It's gross. Like, honestly, it's barely seared.
Yeah.
And then on the inside is just, blue almost.
Yeah,
and
listen, but I mean, my buddy's out west. You get some real good Alberta beef and stuff like that. Like Robin Regeer, I'd go for lunch or dinner with him, and he'd have like a rare steak. I was like, oh, it's still bleeding.
It's prime.
Terrible.
Yeah, it's
terrible.
Prime. Yeah. So Ray Ferraro, our hockey analyst, will join us here in a moment. John Crick of the Sun had a scoop earlier today, where the competition committee is conducting some business, obviously over the phone or over FaceTime in the NFL. And Crick is reporting that the committee is now set to approve of a sky judge in the NFL, which is something you've been advocating for a long time, Noodles.
Yeah.
And there, I guess, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. You need the owners to sign off, or two-thirds of the owners. So you've got to get 24 of them to accept it. But generally, if the committee puts it forward, it's almost a foregone conclusion. It's going to be accepted. And it sounds like that may end up happening. I don't know if it'll be for 2020 or maybe a year or two down the road. But basically the same setup they've always had with officials on the field and then a sky judge effectively either in a replay booth or somewhere in the stadium and has access to all the camera angles and everything live and can get into the ear of at least the head official, if not every single official that's on the field.
Honestly, Brian, I think I think it's coming for every sport. You know, we've had this argument until we're blue in the face that we should, you know, bring Ray in on it too. But I just know that if we're going to be and have a replay in our games, which we are, that's an accepted thing. You're never going to go back to no replay, no nothing. Then I think they want to get it done as fast as possible and get it right. And I've always been an advocate, and I know Ray is in between the benches. Sometimes he's up top. But how many times have we been at a game and you get such a different view from overhead? And if you're wired to the ref and you say, you missed this, I saw that, this is my angle, this is what I saw, it's just another opinion. And to me, I think that's where they're going.
Speaking of Ray, here's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, just talking about this Toronto Sun report that the NFL now, their competition committee, appears to be in favor of a sky judge. You know, someone in the replay booth that has access to all of the different angles and all the different camera views.
Is it one person, Bri?
Yeah, it'll be one person that can commute with either one official, the head, you know, ref on the field, or maybe in the ears of all the refs and the officials on the field. What do you make of that with football in general, Ray? But could you see that working in the NHL?
Well, okay, I don't think I quite understand. So is it one guy working for the league, or is it a sky judge, in, for lack of a better term, in each city at each game?
Yeah, I believe he would be in the building. So
you have to be working for the league.
So it's maybe I'm wrong. Sorry, guys. I thought it was just another referee. Like, to me, another referee.
Let me read this.
No, it says, but guys, that's not how it works now, and that was going to be my point, is that until only recently, the officials have not been able to have a guy, like an ex-official, in the league's office. Like, that all went through, it's almost like, I'll call it a turf war because I don't have the right term for it, and I apologize for that. But the Department of Hockey Operations, the officials, they've been battling over this for a long time as to the guys that are actually making the definitive call on video review. Like, it should be a retired official, one that's recently just retired. They should be there. Like, why would it be somebody that's never officiated before? And you can say, well, you know, all you have to do is know the rules and be able to determine whether the puck's over the line and all that. I think the officials would want an ex-official in their ear more so than some other guy. So I do think it can work. I think the way it works best would be in, so for Columbus or Toronto, there's two or three guys that rotate, and they go into the rink, and they're the sky official for that night. They're on the program just the same as the regular officials are. And their job, some nights they might have five calls. Some nights they might drink three cups of coffee and do nothing. And that's just the way it is. But I do think it can work. But the more streamlined the process is, the better it can be. Noodles, you brought up being between the benches. How about when you're sitting there and you're waiting for the angle that you know is going to tell you the story?
Yeah.
And it's not released from the league yet, so our truck can't send it to us. And you're looking at a replay that doesn't tell you anything six times.
Yeah.
Because they got to show something.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's frustrating as hell. You're like, damn, just get to the overhead. Like, I don't know what it's going to tell me, but that's where the answer is. Yeah. And I think the more that they can scratch away all the conflicting views to things, and you get to just the views you need to, and they're in the hands of the people that are making the decision right away, not six guys going to discuss it. The sky official, the head official, boom, here you are, you got 2 minutes. If you can't figure it out in one or two looks, three looks, then I think you start inventing things. The more you look at a replay.
I don't know how.
You're the Lux, boom, move it.
Who would want that gig? I mean, if you're that one guy, because everyone now, they're like, oh, they go back to Toronto. They don't really mention names or individuals. If you're like that one guy that like butchers something,
well,
you will just get crucified.
Well,
but
I don't
get paid.
But I don't know if the league is being taken out of this necessarily. Like, if there's still a debatable call, I don't think it's up to this guy. I think he's there. Let me read this, okay? So the initial proposal is somewhat vague, as John Crick points out in The Sun, saying that the officiating advisor who is positioned somewhere other than the playing field with full communication to on-field officials and access to a television monitor that displays all broadcast angles provided through the NFL's network independent system. So again, somewhat vague. Where is he? What are his duties? How much power does he have? But the second proposal is more detailed, as Crick points out, and it suggests that games be played under the supervision of 7 officials and a senior technology advisor to the referee. That person would be situated in the stadium's replay booth with ability to hear and communicate with game officials through the official-to-official communication system. The STAR, that's the acronym, is an officiating expert who has an on-field experience as a game official. So, like you said, right, used to be a ref, so has experience on the field. This would suggest has angles and communication, can get in and say, you know, oh, that's the wrong placing. You know, it's 3rd and 6, not 3rd and 7, or where a guy's knee maybe went down, or a face mask, or a roughing the passer. But it doesn't necessarily say that the league is taken out of it on, like, a challenge. You know, I don't think it's up to that man in the sky to determine everything. He's there more as a support staff for the on-field officials. But if it has to be reviewed, whether or not it was a touchdown, whether or not it was pass interference, you know, whatever, I still feel like that would go maybe under the booth, or it would go to the league, or whatever.
Well, I can guarantee, Brian, whatever the most complicated way is, the leagues will find it.
Right, exactly. That's my fear. That's my fear, exactly that, Ray, is that I don't trust them, that this will become overly complicated. It seems ideal. We want to live in a perfect world, but life isn't perfect. Hockey isn't perfect. It never will be.
I agree.
So what's going to happen in baseball then? So, like, in baseball, are they going to get to the automatic balls and strikes calls pretty soon?
I think they will. I think it's a matter of time. But the umpires have a union, and they're under contract for a certain amount of time.
My idea is this. Guys, think about this. There's just like a – right underneath the catcher, there's just like a screen that the ump can go to if there's a question. Isn't that like make sense, where you can have the umpire, any question, have a little peek, Steve Reich.
Well, but just think, they could get the Houston Astros to design it.
They would be on top of it.
Yeah,
they would be on top of it. I still think there would be physical umpires. Like, there'd have to be umps, you know, at first, second, third in the outfield. And I think there would still be an ump, you know, if there's a play at the plate, probably to relay what the call was. You know, if the computer's saying a ball, he's going to issue the ball. If it's a strike, he'll do the strike. But, you know, to with your idea, oh, it's like, if you're going to go half, you might as well, what's the point of being half pregnant? You know, if you're if it's a strike, it's a strike. If it's a ball, it's a ball.
I think having the human element is just it's baseball.
I like
the manager
it too.
The manager coming out and arguing with the umpire. It's a part of the game. I don't know. You don't like anything stupid happening like Robbie Alomar, but you it's part of the game you like seeing.
I agree. The personality bumps and the interactions with managers. I love it.
I just think moving on to, you know, kind of to what Ray was talking about. Like, this all just seems like if you're just adding another resource, and I think that's what you should do. If you've got a 4-man referee team in the National Hockey League, 2 refs, 2 linesmen, why not have a 5th? And the 5th is wired, and he's sitting up top going, you know, this is what I saw. And this is, you know, I've got access to these views. Like, it's helping out. Ray, I don't know if you guys have ever done this. Like, I went and sat in the war room one night. And, you know, with Kay Whitmore and all the guys.
I've not done it, no.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating to see, you know, them work. Like, you know, I know we're hard on them sometimes, but they do a really good job. Like, I know sometimes it, the only time you ever hear about the war room is when you're challenging a call from them or, you know, we're you know, not happy with them. But I sat in there one night with the amount of moving things and moving pieces there. Every guy's got their own game, and then there's a supervisor, and there's so many things coming. Just to kind of take it all in, I think to add more resources, and to me, Ray, I think you're right. Like, I don't know what the verbiage is, but you have to have a referee in there. You have to have somebody who could help out with the calls. It's not even knowing the rule book. It's knowing the instinct of the call as well.
Well, Noodles, that's the last part that you said here is really critical, because I've talked to a couple of refs about this, just, you know, standing around in an airport and you run into somebody and there inevitably was a call the game before that went kind of sideways. And so you're sitting there talking, and one of their great frustrations is that they don't always, or I don't quite know if it's changed yet, but they don't always talk to an official. They're talking to somebody that's never officiated a game before. There's so many, as they're explaining it, there's so many nuances to what they're trying to look at and what they're trying to decide that it would be, to me, it would seem really, really prudent to, if I'm a ref, I want to talk to another ref. It's my ass on the line here, because they're not going to boo the guy sitting in the war room. They're going to boo me when I got to go out to center ice and make the call. So I want somebody that's actually had to go out there, get booed, and understand that, okay, I got to get this right for a whole bunch of reasons. So this is what I saw. What are you seeing? How are we presenting it? And I, not that they're manipulating the system, but I think it's imperative that you would have that technology assistant or whatever the hell they're going to call it, that he would be an ex-official.
Right.
Here, this would be my concern, potential concern, if I was an official on the ice or on the field of play, is what if the league, after a couple of years, realizes, man, the guy up in the stands is making all the calls. What do I need you down there for? Like, that would be my concern, and what I could see, like, with the umpires. You think the umps want some help with technology? The second it gets in the door, it's not long before they're all gone.
Okay, but Hayes, how would a guy in the war room officiate a game?
Well, I'm not necessarily in the war room, but up top. Like, I hear you dropping
the puck. What's he going to do, blow the whistle from up top?
Okay, hockey, I'll give you that. Football, though, if we're talking football, what do you need six guys on the field for if the guy up top's calling everything about whether or not it was onside, offside, roughing the passer?
Yeah, you could have two guys on the field.
What do you need six for?
No,
put
the
ball down, make sure there's not a fight. You know, that would be my concern if I was an NFL ref. Hockey's different because you need to blow the whistle. It's fast-moving. And you need, you know, you're not going to have a guy upstairs calling offsides or too many, you know, whatever it might be. But I don't know. Do you need four guys on? Do you need four? Do you need refs, or do you just need linesmen?
Well,
you know, because those are linesmen gigs. They're not referee gigs.
That's an interesting debate point, isn't it?
It is. But, I mean, you ever watch a hockey game? Do they still have goal judges?
Oh, yeah. They sit up in the press box.
No, but I know,
they're not even on the goal line anymore.
But do you remember there used to be a guy behind you?
Yeah.
Like, I used to bang on the glass and scream at the guy, be like, what the hell are you doing out here? It'd be a 75-year-old man who got a free coat, and he'd panic, the puck would hit the post and go out. All of a sudden, the goal light's going on. You're like, what the hell are you doing?
Just think of his angle, Noodles. It couldn't have been any worse.
There was one guy that blew darts in there.
Yeah.
What's that?
There was one guy that blew darts in that little glass case. I'm not kidding. There was one guy in the league that blew darts in that little case.
He was the judge, jury, and executioner. Dude, that light went on. It was a goal. The puck was on the other end of the rink. They're like, I guess it went in. I don't know.
It used to
the
get to
cool
a
thing.
Let's go ahead, Ray.
Oh, I was going to say, the other cool thing, Noodles, remember, like, so there'd be, like, whether this went in, you guys would be over there smashing your stick on the glass, and then the ref would go over and talk in the little crack between the glass to the guy who'd stick his head out, and you'd see them arguing, and then they'd rule, and then one team would just bark at this guy again.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know. The information process was ridiculous. Because you're right, like, there was a crack in the glass that the ref had to basically put his face up to, and he's talking to this senior citizen going, what's going on? And you know, it just was such a gong show. But I don't even know, like, I'm off the top of my mind. Like, is there a space for a guy there?
No, they got rid of him. They put seats. Those were great seats right behind the net. You know, those
I know.
Are
actually,
now.
If you go to a game in Montreal, I know this one for sure, is like the guy, the light turner on her, he's way up in the corner in the press box, and he's not on the goal line. Like, his job's just, if the net moves, turn the light on.
Right.
He's got no power. He's got nobody cares what his opinion is. Just turn the light on.
But there's an example. I mean, those guys were not, I don't know how seriously they were really taken, but the second technology got, you know, pushed them out of that booth, they became null and void. And that's right. What I'm saying here is, if the guy in the sky is calling every trip, every hook, every roughing, what do I need two guys with an orange band on their arms on the ice for?
Oh, who are you going to argue with?
Well, they're the ones executing the call. And if there is a fight or if there's something, like, you're going to need people out there just basically, you know, the date, almost the hour-to-hour, the play-to-play situation. You'll blow it down for offsides and that. But you're right. What would it be? Like a loudspeaker? The guy would be like, that's tripping. You know, like, you would have to have some form of information transfer for the player to know that he is getting a penalty.
Well, you'd need one guy out there. I guess you could, like, the linesmen have to stay. You know, they call, it's icing, it's offside, it's dropping the puck. They would still be on the ice. But I don't know if you need two guys, two refs, if the guy up top is calling everything. You just need communication between him and the one guy still on the ice.
That comes back to my initial theory, and I said this many years ago. Do you remember that? I said, instead of having two referees on the ice, have one on the ice and have the other guy in the stands that's wired to him, and they are a team. And you're just giving him a different vantage point to look at it so that he's wired to him almost like a coach and a quarterback going, hey, watch this play behind you. I saw this. I saw that. Like, they are a team. It's just they both aren't on the ice. Like, that's kind of what you want to get it right or get a bit different vantage point. That's what you're looking at, is it not having a front and a back guy. How many times have we seen that? And I I'm not here to kick the refs in the shins, but how many times have you seen a call happen where the ref is 5 feet away and it's the guy in the neutral zone making the call?
I'll tell you why that happens, and the only reason I know it is this one ref pulled me aside in an airport, and he was hot because I had criticized him for that thing the night before. And so he drew out a rink, and he showed me that even though you might be 5 feet away, your zone might not be there. You're supposed to be looking, like, we'll say the ref in the corner, he might not be the one checking the front of the net because the guy at center ice has a better view. So he's actually following the puck up at the blue line. And the guy at center, who's 100 feet away, he's the guy that connects in best view-wise to the front of the net. And by the time this ref had finished drawing this diagram, it looked like a four-year-old's diagram. It had lines all over the body. I'm like, no wonder you guys don't know what's going on.
No kidding.
I can't tell.
Ray, before we get you out of here, we were having a discussion earlier in the show. If Tom Brady was single through all these years, who do you think would have a better Rolodex? And you know what I mean by Rolodex.
Yeah, plumbers
Jeter?
And...
yeah.
Jeter or Brady?
Jeter.
Thanks.
No!
Case dismissed.
No!
Case
it's a joke.
Well, listen.
How could that be a joke? Jeter would have the 162-game potential.
Ray, and he's in New York.
Let me
right?
ask.
New York,
me, Brian.
Yankees,
excuse
pinstripe.
Me, Brian.
Well,
excuse
I mean, you're leading the witness
Ray,
here.
Ray.
Objection.
Answer this question. Of the two, who's a better looking dude? Brady or Jeter?
Brady.
That's right. There you go.
But
personality matters.
But why does that matter?
Yeah, pinstripes, personality, New York.
Six Super Bowls and looks like a supermodel. You don't even have to work.
Get
you
real,
you
dude.
Do a waspless
battle. I really get the picture that Jeter was just grinding it out, too.
Yeah, exactly. He had to put in, exactly.
Brady does a walkthrough and removes his shorts. Game over.
Get real, dude. Get Jeter, real.
Jeter, neither, put it this way, neither of those guys ever saw 1 a.m. in a pub or a bar. Not a chance.
Well, that's
they were long gone.
The lights never went on. Yeah, I've been there, and it's a and it's a two-way street. They're like, you're the guy? You're the guy?
You were the 2 a.m.?
All right, buddy. Yeah. We'll leave it there. We'll come up with something else tomorrow.
This is, I see, I think this is the type of thing that we need at the end of each show. Oh, you've got to come up with something like this.
Ray,
Noodles, I didn't hear your choice.
You.
Who did you pick?
I'm mad at you. It's Brady.
I took Brady. I could see the optics of Jeter, but, you know, I think Brady could do damage as well.
Brady is an automatic human triple gin and tonic. Do you guys know what a triple gin and tonic does? It's underpants remover.
All right. Moving on. We'll get to this tomorrow. Bye, Ray.
Bye, guys.
Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, reminding everyone that we all bleed the Maple Leaf. It's the strength and compassion we share as a community that has and will get us through anything. MapleToyota.com. Danny Woodhead, former teammate of Tom Brady's.
We'll ask
him. After 6 o'clock. Yeah, we will.
No,
Overdrive
we're not.
Continues, TSN 1050. All right, we're going to catch up again with Morgan Riley in about 10 minutes. We haven't had Riley on the show in a long time, and he's had himself an up-and-down year based on the injury and considering the performance he put forth a year ago. The expectations were high and was out for a long time, comes back, plays one game, big win against Tampa, and now we know that the league has been shut down again. So we'll revisit our conversation with Morgan. We've got Danny Woodhead coming on in about a half an hour. You know, we're trying to avoid fake news and trying to get people's hopes up. And, you know, we're in a weird spot right now with COVID-19. But I just saw Adam Schefter tweet out earlier this hour, a story out of Pittsburgh, that is suggesting researchers at the University of Pittsburgh believe they have a potential vaccine that would fight the coronavirus. They've tested it on mice, and it's worked out, and they're hoping that they can move forward with a clinical trial. It's still going to take a long time, and you got to be careful. You can't just be pumping people with vaccines that haven't been tested appropriately. But I guess it's a glimmer of hope, you know?
Yeah,
a
there
glimmer
is.
Of hope.
There's a couple glimmers. I watched. Now, again, you have to consider different sources and stuff. This one was a Fox News one, so they're, you know, Fox is, I think, what, far right in the States? I can't remember how it reads. Yeah, so
Trump
but,
supporters.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, anyways, but I'm not even talking political. It was more, it was from a doctor who had several patients and said that he has a cocktail that at least some of his patients haven't had to use ventilators because of his cocktail. So he said he felt like in the you know, the interview, he said it's game changing. So it was nice. Like for me, 99% of the stuff that we see out there, and, you know, rightfully so, is just awful news. And I know that, you know, we're tracking it online, on Twitter, everything. But, you know, for the 1% that you do see these types of stories and the Schefter tweets, stuff like that, you do pay attention because you hope that, you know, maybe there is a light at the end of the tunnel and a little bit of help.
Well, there will be at some point. I mean, there's just too many smart people in the world, too many great scientists and entrepreneurs. And, you know, it's not like we're never going to establish a vaccine. It's just a matter of whether or not it's going to be in a year and a half. Could you expedite the process? And whether or not we can come up with, you know, the professionals can come up with something that can nullify this to an extent. I mean, to the most extreme cases of COVID-19. But that's not for us to figure out. We'll just try to relay any news that we can find that would lead us to believe maybe there's some sort of light at the end of the tunnel. And the tunnel isn't as long as maybe it felt yesterday or the day before. Yeah. You know, we were talking about Schefter yesterday with his stance on the NFL draft and how he's, I guess, not a big fan of it happening in a few weeks, where I disagree with that. I think we need a distraction. Yeah. I think as long as the safety precautions are taken into play. I know some people are like, cancel everything, get rid of everything, now's not the time. Okay, you're entitled to that. You don't have to tune in. But that doesn't apply to everyone. Some people do want a bit of an escape from time to time. Some people don't want to just watch the news and see people dying and trying to, you know, be 24/7 on the news wire about what's going on with the coronavirus. I think the NFL draft has an opportunity to supply people with some entertainment, a sense of normalcy, and I think it's important to have that from time to time. I don't think it's every night, every week, but the Jordan documentary will supply that, the NFL draft in a few weeks. I hope it happens.
I agree. I mean, you know, within reason, like we were talking more yesterday about like Phil and Tiger. That one seems a little bit different because it's, you know, you're right in the middle of the battle, and you know, the NFL for me is, you know, it's still a long ways away. This is just the draft. You can do it in a safe environment, correct? And they're going to do it in a safe environment, correct?
Yeah, they're going to have basically Goodell, I would assume, will be in his office. Maybe he'll be in Vegas, which is where it was supposed to be, but I would assume he'll be set up. He'll have a studio probably in the office and maybe in his home, I don't know, and all the teams are going to be at their respective spots, you know, throughout the country, and they're going to email in their pick, and Goodell will make the announcement, and ESPN will be set up in Connecticut, and the NFL Network will be set up in L.A., and they're doing studio shows right now. It's not like they've shut down their studios and they're going to open them up for the NFL draft. They've been running studio shows this whole time. So I would assume that will just continue. So it's still, there's a chance it could change between now and the end of the month, but at this point, I hope that it doesn't. You know, I hope we're in a position where the NFL draft can happen and give us a chance to tune into something live and different for a change for a few nights. Danny Woodhead in about a half an hour, Darren Dreger in the next hour. Caught up with Morgan Riley earlier this afternoon on how he's keeping himself busy, keeping himself in shape, what it would be like to play in the playoffs in July and or August in Toronto. That and more with Morgan Riley next. All right, longtime NFLer Danny Woodhead will join us in about 20 minutes. Darren Dreger in the next hour as well. Caught up with Morgan Riley, which has been a rarity this year. We haven't talked to a Morgan because of the injury, and I think the nature of the season. It's been kind of an up-and-down year for the Maple Leafs, but obviously now that he's back in Vancouver, he's setting up shop. He was doing the rounds earlier today. He spoke with the media this morning and mentioned that he's been working on his cooking routine. So we caught up with Morgan earlier this afternoon and began by asking him to take us through the new cooking repertoire.
I can confirm that, and I'd just like to circle back and just ask you guys what you were just talking about, because I just got the tail end of it.
Okay, basically, I mean, I fired up the barbecue today because it's like t-shirt weather. So I said, you know what? But I had to hit the clock because we're on live at 4 o'clock. So I said to my wife, you know, with about 10 minutes left, can you take these burgers home because they may not hit the clock? She said to me, she goes, I'm not doing that. I don't want to mess with that. I've never cooked burgers on the barbecue. And I said, like, you know, it's a life skill. And believe me, she's amazing at a lot of things. But apparently the barbecue, it didn't go well. So I had to battle to get on air live at 4.
Oh, well, I appreciate you making that sacrifice for us. but I think that I'll take your side. I think that the barbecue is about as straightforward as it gets when it comes to cooking.
Yeah,
that's what we were saying.
She's intimidated by the barbecue, basically. There's no intimidation by a controlled, like, gas line barbecue.
Yeah, but it's not, like I was saying, it's not a fire pit in the backyard with matches and gasoline and go have at it. You know, it was a controlled situation. But you know what? I'll respect the fact that she said it's not my wheelhouse. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm on your side still, but I think that if you're uncomfortable with it, you stay away from it. That's like me and a whole lot of other things in the kitchen. But
well, what's your go-to right now? I mean, is there one dish where it's like, okay, it's a big night, it's quarantine day 28, and we're gonna really spice it up with a big meal? What's your go-to?
I don't really have a go-to. I think that just been doing a lot of steak and chicken on the barbecue. Made some pasta last night, so I'm just trying to expand my menu. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, that works. I saw a video today. James Harden was walking through, I think, a Walmart or a Target. I think he's in Houston. He might be back in L.A. People are just handing him stuff to sign. It's actually hilarious. Like, right off the rack. People are just grabbing stuff, and they're like, I guess I got to buy this now because I got Harden to sign it. But I was thinking, like, in a time like now, how I don't even know if you're getting outside of the house at all, and social distancing and all that is important, but how would you handle an autograph request right now?
Yeah, I guess to answer the first part, I've been at home pretty much as much as I can be, and I think in terms of the autograph stuff, even when we went to California there before the pause in the season, we said as players that without, I don't think we're going to do in the hotel. Jamie, you know, there's always people out front and stuff. We said that we're not doing that because of what's going on and because of the spread, and you just don't want people handing you things, and, you know, whether it's pictures or pens or books or whatever. I mean that was over a month ago now, so that, I mean, it seems crazy, but I mean, we've been doing that for a while, so I mean, to think about people doing that now in the U.S. to Harden is kind of crazy. But I mean, I'll have to watch that video, I guess.
Yeah, it's up there. It's on Instagram. I think ESPN might have posted it. It's pretty funny. Yeah. Like, he's just walking through Walmart, and people are like, here's a basketball, here's a shirt, sign this. And crazy. He's got security with him, but I guess he's just out whatever he's doing. I don't know. But with that in mind, prior to this and prior to the restrictions that you guys placed on yourselves back in California, craziest place you've ever been asked for an autograph? And is there anything in particular that sticks out that has been handed to you that they wanted autographed?
A few things, maybe, like a pair of shoes or something where I feel bad because, if I'm the kid's parent, I don't really want anyone drawing on their shoes. But, I asked to make sure, but I mean, it's pretty normal. The craziest place is always like if it happens in a bathroom, whether you're out and about or you're at a place to eat, and like you cross paths with someone in the bathroom, they ask you to sign something. It's kind of weird, but I mean, all in all, I think the fans in Toronto are pretty respectful. So, I really don't have anything too exciting to tell you.
With Morgan Riley of the Maple Leafs, so what's your daily routine? We had Spez on with us yesterday, and Jason was saying he's got a really quality setup in his house. He's working out. He's like, he acknowledges he's 36, about to be 37. He's got to keep the edge, so he's working out pretty diligently. What about yourself? What's the workout routine like, and what's going on out there?
It's been just home workouts, obviously, so that makes it a bit more difficult, but, you know, lots of riding the bike, body weight workouts, and just doing some maintenance stuff. And I think, I mean, there's really no excuse not to do it right now just because we're all at home for so long. So, you wake up and you just try to, you know, create a plan for yourself. I think that's the most important thing right now, because for me, it's so easy just to have a coffee or two and just kind of be lazy. But I think if you have a plan and you have an approach that you're trying to take every single day, it helps me anyway just to get my day started with a workout. And, you know, that's oftentimes riding the bike for 30, 40 minutes. And then I do a little core, do body weight stuff. But, I mean, I'm with Spez. I mean, I like doing that stuff in the morning. I like having a schedule, but I mean, there's no question that it can be difficult at times. And, but that being said, we're all in it together. And, you got to do what you can to keep your body ready. And, it's important for us right now.
It was obviously a battle for you. You get injured and then you just come back, and then now you have the pause in the season. Take us through how you felt when you first came back, because I think, the team welcomed you with open arms, and really the team seemed a lot more energized when you got back into the lineup. Basically, take us through it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the injury happened on I believe January 12th, so it was an 8-week process trying to get back from a broken foot. I mean, it was tough for sure. I mean, there were days where you're in a cast, and it's not great being at home and the guys are on the road, and I mean, you're just doing what you can to come back and just try to help the team. And obviously during that time, we had some games that that we can be really proud of, and then we had some games that, weren't our best. So I think that I mean, it just motivates you to come back and be a difference maker. So, I mean, when you come back, you play one game, you feel good, you win, and, I mean, we beat a good team in Tampa, and then you go on this pause. I mean, it's not what you want, but that being said, I think if you're going to take a positive out of it, I mean, at least I got one in, because I think I'd be going nuts if I hadn't played since early January. So it's obviously not ideal, but I mean, to come back and, you know, to be around the guys again was a great feeling for sure. But the pause is difficult. But I mean, like I said before, we're all dealing with the same thing. I mean, nobody wants to be in this situation, but I think it's important that we all do our part. And, I mean, stay inside and do what we can to beat this thing so we can get back playing soon.
With Morgan Riley of the Maple Leafs, you speak for everyone. I mean, we're all hoping you guys can get back and play, whether that's, you know, finishing out the regular season or stepping right into a playoffs. We discuss you guys daily, and in the past few years, you guys have been building and building and building. And this year, I don't think has gone as planned. I think that's safe to say. I'm sure you would agree with me. I mean, you guys are still in a playoff spot, and you're on pace to be in the playoffs. But there's been some struggles. There's been some injury problems. Do you guys feel as a group that the playoffs is a chance to, you know, salvage the season, redeem yourselves, and prove that all the expectations that you've had for yourself were justified, and you can show that come playoff time if and when we get that in?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think that, you know, if you're a team that has high expectations and you hold yourself to a high standard, you don't want to look back at the year and not be happy with it, and, you know, be a team that has the ups and downs that we've had so far. I think you want to be more consistent than we've had been. There's no question about that, and the players are completely aware of that. And I think that, you know, I'm with you. I mean, I want to come back and play, but, you know, we don't know when that's going to be. And obviously, we're always going to do what we're told from the health professionals. But, you know, if you have an opportunity to play playoffs, you really want to prove people wrong. I mean, there's definitely lots of people that have been hard on our team, and rightfully so, given the way that we played at times. But I think that, you know, as players, we really believe in the group we have and, you know, what we've built over the years. And I think that, I mean, if that chance to play comes, I mean, that's a big opportunity for us to come back and do what you said to prove people wrong. And, I mean, try to make the most of a situation that isn't great for anyone. But, I mean, as a team, I mean, like I said, we really do believe in what we've built. And, I mean, that would be a good chance for us to come back and play some good hockey.
Well, if that happens, you know, I guess it's conceivable we could be seeing you guys play in July or into August. How do you envision that playing out? Like, you'll be showing up to practice in flip-flops and shorts and a tee. I mean, what's that going to, like Scotiabank Arena on August 15th, game 7, you know, or whatever. What do you think that would be like in the city of Toronto?
I really have no idea. I think that I'm with you guys in the essence that I don't know what to expect. And if that is what happens, it'll be on us as players to make the most of it and be prepared for that. Because, I mean, we want to play for sure. But, I mean, like I said, we're always going to do what's best. And, you know, if that's what the league decides, then it's on us to be ready. And, I mean, it's certainly going to be strange. But, I mean, just given the opportunity to play again would be worth it for sure. But, I mean, on that note, there's more going on than just hockey. I think we all know that. And that, you know, we're always going to do what we're told. And so, I mean, I think that we just have to stay ready and do our part when it comes to the quarantine and keep ourselves at home and help flatten the curve and beat this thing. And, I mean, we'll deal with the hockey later.
Is there, I mean, being cooped up, it's funny because my routine hasn't changed that much. I'm a bit of a bat and I don't go out that much anyways. So people don't really, it's funny, people get on me because I haven't changed too much other than just going to the studio. But I do have kind of like a thought process when this is all over, something that you, outside of hockey, we all know we miss hockey, we miss certain things. Is there something that you miss particularly that you took for granted before this, I guess, self-imposed quarantine?
I mean, yeah, I think that there's lots of things. I think that, I mean, being able to play in Toronto and live downtown, I think you're exposed to a, you know, a great part of the world that, you know, we get to live in. And I mean, I miss just going for walks downtown. And, I mean, you poke your head into a coffee shop on Queen Street somewhere. I mean, I really enjoy doing that kind of stuff. And, I mean, obviously being home in Vancouver right now, that's not in the cards. And even right now, if we were in Toronto, we're not supposed to be doing that. So I think you just miss being social with other people and, you know, experiencing downtown Toronto for everything that it is. And, I mean, I'm certainly looking forward to a time where we're able to do that again. And, you know, we're able to go out in groups with your teammates, go for dinner. And I know, Jamie, you certainly miss going for dinner on the road, and I miss doing that stuff too. But
yes, I do.
Yeah, dinner on the road. Sure.
So all those things that come with, you know, playing a team sport, where like you get to spend time around your friend every day, being at the rink, you know, practicing. And, you know, there are times over the course of a long season where, you know, practicing is probably one of the last things you want to do, just because of the grind of the season. But, I mean, we miss being there. We miss being on the ice together, being at the rink. And, I mean, like I said, just kind of traveling around. I mean, we're so lucky to do what we do. And, I mean, once you kind of lose track of all those small things that you enjoy along the way, I mean, you really start to appreciate them.
Does everyone more or less work, like, live downtown, or are there a couple of guys, like the older guys, maybe with kids, who are living on the outskirts of downtown?
Yeah, I think mostly the players on the team that are young will be downtown or like in the downtown area, and then the older guys will be kind of on the outskirts or out in Etobicoke by the practice rink.
Right. Well, you know, continued health and safety out there in Vancouver. We look forward to having you back in town. We're hoping you guys can get back on the ice sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And as always, we appreciate you doing this. Thank you, Morgan.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. Thanks.
There he is, Morgan Riley of the Maple Leafs. He's back home in Vancouver, but like everyone else, he's hoping he gets back to Toronto at some point soon and either wraps up a regular season or gets right into the playoffs. Either way, the Leafs would be a part of that program. And at this point, that's all we can do is hope. So thanks again to Morgan Riley for joining us. Final hour up next. Danny Woodhead will join us, longtime NFLer. He's got a podcast out. We'll tell you about that. Get into a number of things with Danny. And Darren Dreger will join us. And two more battles currently ongoing, courtesy of the Overdrive Madness Bracket. We'll get to that and more next.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.